This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody, my name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And welcome to the first of several podcasts talking about the International Convention. Coming up when, Ryan?
The International Convention is Wednesday, August 15th to Saturday, August 18th, 2012 in Orlando, Florida at the Hilton Orlando Bonnet Creek Resort.
And you know what that's next to, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Disney World. Woohoo.
Very close by, too. I don't know if you looked it up online at all, but
no.
It's very close by
and it's a very happy place.
Yep.
So if we're going to the convention, we're going to Disney. That's the way it's going to be. Like we did last year, what we're going to be doing is incorporating several little clips of interviews into several podcasts. So you'll hear about four different interviews per podcast, starting with this first one and probably going until June. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
And joining us now is one of our presenters from the 2012 International Convention from Nashville, Tennessee, Mr. Sam Davidson. He's a professional speaker, entrepreneur, and author. Sam Davidson, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. Great to have you with us. So, Sam, I understand the title of your presentation this summer is From Public Speaker to Professional Speaker, What's Your Story? And tell us, what is the story about your presentation? What exactly does that mean, and what are you going to be speaking about?
Absolutely. The title of the presentation comes from what I think is a fine line in the speaking world, in that a lot of people are great public speakers. They've learned the skills either through their local Toastmasters group or in the workplace or wherever else, but they're having a hard time figuring out, how do I take these skills as a public speaker and translate them into a career as a professional speaker? Mm. Much like we have amateur and professional athletes, I think we have the same with speakers. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the skill set is any less. It just means that they're not earning any or substantial income from them. And so in my presentation, I really want to showcase some different ideas that I've used and that I've seen others use to make that transition from just a public speaker to a professional speaker and someone that is earning income that can support them, support their family.
Now, is this something that everybody could do, or is not everybody cut out to be a professional speaker?
No, I mean, so in the professional speaking world, you've got a few types of speakers. So you obviously have the celebrity or the well-known name, and that person, because they've done something else in life, maybe they've been a politician, maybe they've been a celebrity of some sorts, they're sort of automatically a professional speaker because people invite them to the conference or the event for that kind of a wow factor.
Right.
But I think a lot of other people who are experts in a given field or who have a great career and great experience that they want to share can also make that transition. So I would say, yeah, as long as somebody has the skill set of a public speaker and they've trained, they've practiced, they've spent hours perfecting that craft, then they can translate that into an area where they can start earning a living and charging speaking fees.
Sam, what do you consider a professional speaker? Somebody who just gets paid or somebody who does it full-time as a career?
Yeah, it's a little both. Obviously, if somebody's going to do it full-time as a career, there needs to be an income associated with that unless they have some other source of income. But more often than not, I'm seeing more and more that people are paying speakers and they're starting to pay them more and more if they're good at what they do and if they have something great to say and they have a great story to tell. And so I would define a professional speaker, yes, first of all, as somebody who is earning some kind of income. And when folks start out, as the case was with me, it wasn't full-time income, and I had to supplement with a handful of other things. But over time, as people do it more, and if they are smart about building up a system, especially a referral system, where they can go back to clients and use that to generate new business, then over time they can go from just earning something to where they are building a career around it.
All right.
And Sam, I imagine many attendees who go to your session will have read your session description on Toastmasters.org and seen that one of the things you're going to talk about is helping the members of the audience find and identify their personal story that's authentic, timely, and relevant, as it says in the description. Do you believe someone who's reasonably motivated, who doesn't recognize a unique story that they have to tell or share, does have one, and that it just needs to be uncovered, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a lot of what we're going to spend time in my session talking about, is that what is that core story that you have as an individual? Because more often than not, I found that meeting planners and other conference professionals are looking for something unique in a speaker. And so they're looking for, maybe it's a true life story, or they're looking for something different and something compelling that a speaker can bring to the stage. And so I believe that anybody has that story within them, and it's just a matter of figuring out, what is it? Because if we're all going to talk about the same topic, then I feel like sometimes you get into this habit or perhaps danger of just acting. And so if I try to advertise myself as, hey, I'll speak about anything, then what am I really bringing that's unique? If you're just giving me a script, or I'm talking about anything from sales to leadership to motivation, industry trends in a particular business. And so what I've found is that by actually limiting what it is you're going to talk about, but starting with your story, but then limiting that to a key area, you'll in the end be more successful, because then you'll be able to stand out as best in class almost by the best person or one of the top five people to speak about a certain topic. And I've also found that when people are telling their own story, or they're talking about something that they are very good at, or sharing what it is that's personal to them, their passion for that topic and their knowledge really shines forth. And perhaps in college or high school, you had a professor or that teacher who was teaching about maybe a general subject area. So they were teaching biology 101. And they were pretty good. They got the information across. But later, maybe when you took them as an upperclassman and they were talking about a certain species of frogs, let's say, you could really see their excitement. Mm. And I think it's the same thing with speaking, is that the more defined we get in terms of our topic, or the more that we can really hone in on that niche area, then our personal story, our personal experience will really shine through, and we'll be great on stage. And that's what will help us continue to get more gigs.
Well, Sam, this sounds great. It sounds like it's going to be a wonderful presentation. So good luck with it. Sam, when is your event going to be at the International Conference?
The event will be on Friday afternoon at 3 p.m.
Wonderful. All right, Sam, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing everybody down in Orlando.
All righty.
Thanks, Sam. And joining us now from Castleman, Ontario, is Chris Ford. Chris is a distinguished Toastmaster, past international president, and a leadership and conflict management expert. Chris Ford, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Chris.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for that hearty round of applause.
It's great
to
bet.
Be with you, gentlemen.
Likewise, Chris. Chris, I understand your session title is Leading from the Middle.
And that is right.
My first question for you is, what does that mean, leading from the middle, in the context of the session you'll be presenting?
Yes, what it means is that leaders, whether they know it or not, whether they like it or not, are in the middle of a much larger leadership environment. I think too often we tend to look at leadership as a relationship between the leader and the team, the leader and the followers, the leader and these other people who form an intimate relationship with the leader. But beyond that, there are many other individuals and perhaps organizations that influence leadership. So I want to expand the thinking beyond leader and team to the broader leadership environment.
Now, Chris, what do you know about leadership? What have you ever led before?
I've heard about it. Sounds like an interesting concept.
You've led, what is it, 225,000 Toastmaster members? Is that the current number?
Well, the current number is more like 270,000. When I was the international president in 2007-08, yes, I think the number was about 240,000 or pushing that. I had hoped we would get to a quarter of a million that year, but we're certainly beyond that now.
Wow.
But my leadership experience, of course, includes many, many opportunities in Toastmasters, for which I thank the organization sincerely. It's just been a wonderful ride, so to speak, and I've learned a lot from it. Professionally, I've had a 35-year career in the Canadian Army. I started as an officer cadet and was challenged to develop my leadership skills then. I retired about 10 years ago as a brigadier general. So I've been able to work on leadership, develop my leadership skills, and share them with others from every rank, from the most junior up to strategic and executive leadership. I think I've learned a thing or two along the way, made a few mistakes along the way, that's for sure. But again, it's been part of my leadership development. And just very briefly, since retirement, amongst other things, I went back into the public service of Canada as a civilian, worked as a director in citizenship and immigration, and a director general back in defense, leading our conflict management and resolution program. So, as I said, I think I've experienced a bit of leadership over many, many years, and just looking forward to an opportunity to share some insights with others.
All right, I'm impressed.
All right.
Chris, when I hear the phrase leading from the middle, my mind immediately goes to a middle manager in an organization. But I think you're proposing something more broad than that, and it sounds like the material you're going to present would apply not only to a middle manager, but someone who's leading an entire organization, like the international president or a CEO, as well as a frontline employee. Is that the case? Does this material apply to folks at all levels of organizations?
You've got it exactly right there, Ryan. If you Google or enter into your search engine leading from the middle, you'll find many, many hits about the idea of being a middle manager or a middle supervisor, and what does that mean? My idea here is much broader than that. No matter where you are in an organization, be it the international president, the president of the United States of America, the prime minister of Canada, or maybe you're somewhere further down on the totem pole, you always have people that you are working to. You have a set of higher ups. For example, the Prime Minister of Canada, arguably the leading politician in the country, has a set of higher-ups. They're called the taxpayers. They're called the citizens of the country. That's who the Prime Minister works for. Hmm. In Toastmasters, sure, the President kind of looks like a top dog, if you will, but no, we invert our pyramid, don't we? We put the President at the bottom of it all. But even if you stick with the higher-up concept, the higher-ups in Toastmasters are the members, right? Mm. The president has to be responsive to the needs and the wishes and the interests of the members, otherwise he or she is not providing the service required. If you take a classical organization, it doesn't matter where you are and what your title is. We all have a boss that we need to work to. But there's more than just the boss. And I see four distinct groups that surround the leader, in addition to the team, that is. There's what I call the fan club, the people who are on the sidelines or perhaps in the organization cheering you on. Yeah, you're doing a great job, Chris. Keep it up. We love what you're doing. There's another group called the peers, my colleagues on the same level who may or may not appreciate what I'm doing, may or may not understand that what I'm doing, but I certainly need to connect with them. I need to reach out to them. I need to find out what their needs and interests are. And then, like it or not, we've got another group. I call them the detractors, and they're the ones that are trying to pull you down. They don't understand you. They don't want to understand you. They want to get in your way. They'd just rather see you go away. And as a leader, we need to understand all of those groups. Who's in those groups? What are their needs and interests? And why should I, as a leader, care about that? That's what I mean by the much broader leadership environment.
And I assume that you will be answering either all or some of those questions during your presentation.
All in about 45 minutes. Now, it's a tall order. What I want to do is, let's say, whet the appetite of the people who come to this workshop.
Right.
Expand the thinking. Get people to understand that there are these other groups. Oh, and did I mention the customer or the client or the membership that needs to be satisfied too? And I'll describe all of the complex relationships that exist. Sure, I will deal with the detractors in the fan club, but people in the fan club and the detractors and the higher-ups, they're all talking too, whether I like it or not, whether I know it or not. So how do we influence those communication relationships, and how do we fully appreciate the large environment of our leadership challenge so that we can do a better job with the team and a better job of, at the end of the day, serving the customer or the client or the member.
Sounds great. It sounds like good stuff. And when are you going to be doing all this? When is your session?
Yes, it's on Friday afternoon, 17th of August at 1 o'clock.
All right. Chris Ford, thank you so much for being on with us, and we look forward to seeing you at the International Convention.
I look forward to seeing both of you, Bo and Ryan, and hundreds if not thousands of others at the convention.
All righty.
All right.
You take care.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks very much. Bye for now.
Bye.
And joining us now is Matt Abrahams. Matt is joining us today from the heart of Silicon Valley in California, and he is going to be presenting at the Toastmasters International Convention a session titled Speaking Up Without Freaking Out, Tips and Tricks from Overcoming Speaking Anxiety. Matt Abrahams, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Good to have you back.
Yes, thank yes, you. We did an episode with Matt, episode number 43, Know Thy Fear, in April 2011. And a similar topic to what your session is about. I think from the title, it's fairly self-explanatory, but if you could give our listeners a sneak preview of what's in store for your session, Matt.
Certainly. I'm really excited to be presenting at the International Convention. We're really going to be focusing on techniques that are practical that people can employ to become more credible and compelling when they speak. And really at the heart of that is confidence. And many of us, even if we've been speaking for a long time, still have some anxiety around it. And we'll be looking at lots of different aspects of anxiety, from the sources of anxiety, to anxiety associated with the anticipation of speaking, the preparation to speak, and the actual anxiety that happens when you're doing the presenting.
Do people get anxiety thinking about anxiety?
Absolutely. There's a whole area of study that looks at the anxiety that comes from being anxious and getting anxious.
Oh, boy.
Matt, you're a Toastmaster. You're a believer in the program, obviously. And as you know, many people join Toastmasters to overcome their speaking anxiety. So I'm curious to know, without giving away the whole list of ingredients in your secret sauce, what are attendees going to find unique about your approach to overcoming speaking anxiety beyond what they get from the Toastmasters program?
Yeah, I am a firm believer in Toastmasters, not only as a member, but as a teaching academic. I always recommend Toastmasters to my students to further their education and their experience with speaking. And you're right, people stay nervous even after lots of experience with speaking. I believe it's an innate part of who we are, and yet there are many, many techniques that we can use to help us manage that anxiety. What I believe is there is no secret sauce. It's really about unlocking many techniques that are locked away in academic journals and other sources that really people just need exposure to and to really get practice with. And I think if people attend this session, they will get direct practice with techniques, and it's all about finding the techniques that will work for each individual. I call it creating your own anxiety management plan so that you have it at your discretion when you need it, and it'll help you become more calm and confident, which will ultimately lead to more credible and compelling speaking.
It sounds like your session is going to be a little bit interactive. Is that true?
Absolutely. People need to come expecting to be up and doing some techniques. We will do some discussion, but it's going to be a lot of actual activity working on these techniques. There's no better way to learn an anxiety management technique than to actually do it.
Very good. Could you maybe give us one little peek into an exercise that you'll be doing in your session?
One of the things that we'll spend time talking about is confident speakers tend to do certain behaviors when they speak, and those who are anxious tend to do other behaviors. So we're going to be looking at very specific speaking behaviors that we can enact. It will help us appear confident. I like to call this fake it till you make it. The wonderful thing about these techniques is as you implement them, your audience sees you as a confident speaker, and you then become more confident and your anxiety abates. So we're going to be working on some very specific nonverbal communication skills that will help people feel more comfortable and look more comfortable.
That's great. You piqued my interest. I don't know if you should share just one of those techniques with us. or if we should just wait. What do you think, Matt?
I think I can share one of the techniques because there's so many more.
Okay, great.
Let me give you an example. When people present or begin a presentation and they have some level of anxiety, right, they tend to retreat, and not only retreat in the power of their voice, but they retreat physically in their body position and posturing. Most anxious speakers, when they start to speak, take a step back, bring their arms up, look down. All of those are natural responses to a threat, and it makes you look uncomfortable, and it makes your audience uncomfortable. And then you get into this vicious feedback loop where you notice your audience is uncomfortable, that makes you feel more nervous, makes them feel more nervous. Right. Simply by stepping forward into your audience, opening your hands and extending them away from your body, making good eye contact, you can absolutely come off as a confident speaker, and your audience will treat you as a very confident speaker.
I like it.
Definitely. And I trust there's a lot more where that came from, Matt.
Oh, he just
absolutely.
That's the tip of the iceberg, yeah. Ryan. There's a bunch more where that came from.
Great.
Matt, thank you so much. When is your session going to be? What time and day?
My session is Friday, August 17th at 3 p.m. I hope to see lots of Toastmasters there.
Wonderful. And from the sounds of your session, I bet you will.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for being with us. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And joining us now is distinguished Toastmaster, world traveler, and professional speaker, Sid Chopra. Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, Sid.
Welcome, Sid.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Great to have you with us. Now, Sid, I know your session title for the International Convention is Lost in Translation. So my first question for you is, what exactly is Lost in Translation, and how can we find it again?
Well, Lost in Translation is about intercultural communication, all the tricks and traps that we seem to fall into more increasingly because of the fact that we've got globalization just going at full tilt. So we're interfacing with people from other cultures and from other organizations that have very different vantage points and very different vocabularies and habits and understandings and the things that can happen to us when we have to interact.
All right, that's fair. And when we talk about other cultures, I'm sure most people are probably thinking dealing with people from, say, different ethnic backgrounds, maybe different languages, but is part of this culture, like, for example, if you're dealing with someone who is from an organization that's different culturally, or is that beyond the scope of your session?
Well, certainly, there are things, the rules that we talk about, we're going to be more tailored towards international, mm-hmm, you know, country to country, intercultural. But the certainly the same rules will apply to people that are talking to, you know, I'm in IT, talking to somebody who's in accounting. There's a lot of the same things that have to go on because we do have very different vocabularies and different ways of thinking. And as communicators, you know, the burden is really on us to make sure that we are able to get our message across to them. And, you know, they live in a different world. Mm. Sometimes it's a physical world and sometimes it's just a mental world.
Right. Now, I bet there are a lot of people from different cultures here in the States. So even if people aren't working internationally or working with people all over the world, they're still working with people from different cultures that happen to live here in the States. And I assume that your topic covers that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hmm. Now, I wanted to ask you, Sid, how are you going to be communicating this information? Are you going to be using stories, techniques, interactive exercises with members of the audience? So what's the session going to look like?
Well, I think we're going to have to use all of these things. I want to make sure that we use as many learning modalities as we possibly can. And that's one of the challenges you have in communication with other cultures. You don't always have that same, you know, vocabulary and language. You have to use other kinds of ways of communicating. And so we'll experiment with some of those things and have some fun with it.
Sid, I think oftentimes people maybe get a little nervous about communicating with someone from a different culture because they're afraid to say the wrong thing and offend someone. Mm. So I imagine certainly there must be certain things to be aware of about the culture you're dealing with. to be sensitive to that culture. But are there things, let's say if you just find yourself in a situation where you're communicating with someone from a culture that's unfamiliar to you, are there certain universal things you could do to maybe show your goodwill? And even if you do something that's culturally insensitive, to help your listener be aware that...
Forgive you.
Yeah.
Forgive your stupidity.
You don't mean any harm.
You know, and the funny thing is that that's happened to me a lot. I've traveled, you know, to far more countries than I know the languages of. And one of the things that's kind of universal, and we've actually studied this, your facial expressions carry a lot of weight. There's a gentleman by the name of Paul Ekman, who was the scientist behind the science in the show Lie to Me, if you ever watched the TV show Lie to Me.
Mm-hmm.
And we had these things called micro expressions, and we were wired to be able to pick up on those differences. And it's a biological advantage for us to have that ability, because we had to use faces, our facial expressions, long before language evolved. And even as babies, we have to be able to read our you know, parents' facial expressions. So long, you know, before we could actually know our first words. So, you know, our faces is really very valuable in communication, and it to the point where it can, you know, tell us whether or not we're lying or someone's lying to us. So that's the first thing. Smile.
Mm.
Be friendly. Have a genuine sense of curiosity about somebody and caring. You can show all of these things without ever saying a word. And those nonverbal gestures are huge in those situations.
Right. No, I think that's good advice, not only for cross-cultural, but what do you call it? Incultural? Is that the correct term as well?
Yeah. We have this thing with something called incongruity. If I'm saying one thing, but my facial expressions say another, it can hijack whatever I'm saying.
Right.
You'll believe more about what my face is telling you sometimes than you will what I'm saying in words.
Right.
Mm.
Oh, this is good stuff. This is going to be great. And when is your session, Sid?
It's on Thursday at 1 o'clock.
All right. And that's not this Thursday, but...
No, it's not this Thursday. I think it's like August 16th. So you've got some time.
All right.
You can, you know, register right now and reserve your spot.
That's great.
Great.
Good stuff, Sid. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right. We'll see you at the convention.
Thanks, Sid.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.